Welcome to ApplauseCast Travel.
Well, I thought I would begin with just the first two pages of a book that I wrote called The Global Soul. And the reason I chose this passage is partly because it describes events that happened right in my house. And so I think it speaks to my sense that for travel writing, you don't have to go to the far corners of the world. Everything in your immediate environment is interesting if you look at it with the right eyes. And also, although it's a description of actual events that happened in the house where I'm sitting in Santa Barbara, I thought it spoke metaphorically for what many people are experiencing in different ways across the globe. And I suppose my notion of writing is that it should be very, very vivid and particular, but at the same time, it should spin out a kind of metaphor or parable that rises beyond the particulars. So this is the first two pages of The Global Soul. Suddenly, the flames were curling 70 feet above my living room, whipped on by 70-mile-per-hour winds that sent them ripping across the dry brush like maddened horses. I tried to call the fire department, but the phone was dead. I tried to turn the lights on, but the electricity was gone. I went upstairs again to see that the flames, which minutes before had been a distant knife of orange cutting through a hillside, were now all around me. The view through the picture windows, a wall of flames. I picked up my mother's cat and ran out of the house with two friends who had just arrived to try to be of help, but there was nowhere for us to go. At our feet, a precipitous slope that fell towards the road. On every other side, fires that were rising to a crest. We jumped into a car and drove down the orange-lit driveway to the narrow mountain road, and there saw that we couldn't go up, we couldn't go down. Bushes were bundles of orange, and flames were leaping over the slope beside us like dogs jumping at a fence. The way down led to a blaze of burning. The way up led into the conflagration. Beside us on the road was one other vehicle, a water truck driven up by a good Samaritan who found himself now as trapped as we were, stood alone in the road in his shorts, extending a forlorn hose towards the fire. Already, the smoke was so thick we could not even see the helicopters above us as we sat in an angry orange haze listening to their blades. One friend and our new companion stood at the road and pointed the water at every new roar of fire that flamed over the ridge. I'd never known that fire moves so fast, so purposefully. I could see it cutting through the slope across from us as if with a letter opener and scrambling up my driveway as if summoned to an execution. We sat in the car, the cat coughing in my lap, and for 2 hours saw and felt nothing but flames and more flames. After nightfall, at last a fire truck came up and led us back to a safer spot a little down the road, from which, as an opera played on the radio, I saw the fire up above lick at my room, reduce the second floor to a skeleton, charge down towards the city below. Along the road, a horse was running madly. A man caked in soot appeared, not knowing where he was going. Below, we could see cars burning placidly along the side of the road. At last, after another hour, the fire having already shot into the suburbs below and leaping the 8 lanes of the freeway which lead all the way to Canada, we were free to drive down through a wasted world of steaming cars and ravaged houses, the black hills all around wearing necklaces of orange. I got taken to a friend's house, went across to an all-night supermarket to buy a toothbrush, and started my life anew. The next day, in the early morning, I returned to the road along which I'd been driving for all my adult life and found it blocked off, exhausted firemen sitting on the pavement at the foot of the mountain, bowing their heads or gulping from bottles of water. I was allowed to climb it, though, the fire having retreated back into the hills, and so for the first time in 25 years, I walked all the way up the road, past houses reduced to chimneys or just outlines of themselves, past other houses just as randomly, entirely intact. Here and there, wisps of smoke still trickled up through the asphalt, and beside the hulks of cars along the road, the aluminum from their hubcaps had made little pools of silver. When I arrived at my house, high up on a ridge, 2/3 of the way up the mountain, it was to find a smoking ash-gray sea. Bronze statues had been reduced to nothing. Filing cabinets were husks. All the props of my parents' 60 years, all the notes and prospects I'd been collecting for 15 years, all the photographs' memories, all the past, gone. I'd often referred to myself as homeless, an Indian born in England and moving to California as a boy with no real base of operations or property even in my 30s. I'd spent much of the previous year among the wooden houses of Japan, reading the burning house poems of Buddhist monks and musing on the value of living without possessions and a home. But now, all the handy metaphors were actual, and the lines of the poems, included in the manuscript that was the only thing in my shoulder bag when I fled, were my only real foundations for a newfound Asiak life.
If you'd like to leave us email regarding tonight's podcast, drop us a line at ontheair@applausecast.com. If you'd like to have ApplauseCast produce a podcast for you or your organization, email us at sales@applausecast.com or call us at 650-400-3929. This has been an ApplauseCast production.